This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Hizril Ashraf. Now, a lot of the conversations around Orang Asli communities tend to gravitate around land rights, right? Whether it's in the news, social media. But I've been thinking, you know, how far do we go on an individual basis to get a better grasp of some of the roots behind this issue of land rights and their culture, their connection to nature, which is in many ways the foundational bedrock of their society and their way of life. And on top of that, I guess, connect with what's in many ways something that's an essential part of our national identity. These are the conversations 27-year-old visual artist Sharifa Nadira is trying to have through her illustrative book, which is titled Recalling Forgotten Tastes. In it, she illustrates several plants that the Orang Asli rely on and find crucial to their way of life. And it tells the story of their relationship with nature. So I decided to speak with her, the author and illustrator of Recalling Forgotten Tastes, today on her journey and her experience putting together this project. Nadira, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Right. So before we get into your project and your book that you've published, tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
So I actually studied architecture and worked in the firm for 2 years back in 2015. But I've always wanted to do something else other than, you know, just being in this really demanding construction field. And you could say that I rebelled through to be where I am today.
You followed your heart then.
Yeah. Because in 2017, I left my 9-to-5 job to start a design and print studio with my co-partner, Alani Iman, who is a product designer. So this small company of ours is called Paypoich Studio. And we do everything from graphic design to corporate branding and printing as well. But besides managing our small business, I also practice as an artist, working on some research projects such as this book.
And how long have you been doing this? How long has the company existed?
It started back in 2017. So it's been like almost 3 years. I mean, more than 3 years now. Yeah.
And how are things during this pandemic? You know, has it greatly impacted your business?
For sure. Mm. Yeah, I think it has impacted all types of businesses anyway. And for us, it's just a matter of, you know, holding through these tough tides and just working with what we have for now. Yeah.
Right. And I hope that improves, right, as for, you know, all businesses here in Malaysia.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed. So walk us through your book. It's called Recalling Forgotten Tastes. What's it about?
So essentially, the book is a collection of illustrated edible and also non-edible plants that are connected to certain individuals' indigenous knowledge that was gathered from my time with them. It also touches briefly on traditional culinary practices by members of the community from the Semai and the Temuan subgroups. It's rather a short read, but the book focuses mainly on the illustrations and the knowledge of the plants according to the members of the community. Also, the book, actually, it's just an idea to celebrate food diversity and also reignite memories of food we no longer eat or perhaps were never even introduced to in the first place. Yeah, it's also a collective effort with my indigenous teachers from different villages in Selangor and one in Negeri Sembilan to document these indigenous plants and food through paintings, writings, and of course their reflections. Yeah.
What inspired you to do this in the first place? Because I'd imagine, I think when a lot of us talk about the Orang Asli, I feel, you know, distant and somewhat disengaged with the community, even though I read about them in the news, you know, we hear them a lot, land rights and issues on social media. Why did you decide to engage in this project?
for me, it really started with a really deep interest in plants and the natural environment, the botanical plants and our local ecology. And I just love studying them through paintings. But at one point, it just struck me to do more research on our local ecology. Mm. And I meet friends with a group of ecologists from Urban Biodiversity Initiative. And from there, I also got to know a few botanists from Rimba Ilmu as well, of which all of them had made a huge impact in this research and just completely changed how I view plants entirely. Mm. I also met Dr. Rusaslina Idrus. She's an anthropologist from University of Malaya. She works closely with Orang Asli communities for more than a decade now, I think. And I mean, she was aware of my interest back then. And we went for a Christmas celebration one day in one of the Orang Asli villages in Labu. And the ladies of the kampung brought us for a little garden tour around their compound. And I was just inspired to learn more of this knowledge, you know, that often just goes either unnoticed or was never even written or recorded.
Right. So you said you went on these foraging trips, you engaged with community figures. But, you know, how exactly did these trips turn into the project? Right. What sort of conversations did you have that helped you to decide, okay, you know what, I'm going to turn these trips into a knowledge gaining experience, and I'm going to record these things and turn it into a book.
So I met Encik Rahman, who is from Gombak. He's from the Semai group. I met him about 3 years ago, and he was already bringing in students from all walks of life to the jungle near his home to teach about survival skills. And we ended up going for multiple foraging excursions afterwards. At the same time, I was also fortunate enough to have met Shak Koyok, is an indigenous fine artist. I met him a number of times before I finally mustered enough courage to ask him if I could visit his village in Pulau Gempas in Selangor.
Mm, right.
I thought about this idea for a long time, but I didn't have the right people to talk to. So when meeting these people like Rahman and Shah and his family, and just learning about their, not only about the forest and their culture, but the existing problems and social issues, their struggles with, external factors that continue to threaten their livelihood, basically. Mm. Yeah, so it became, at one point it became like, you know, these illustrations cannot exist on their own. The book has to carry their narrative, to carry the message across. Yeah.
To follow up on that, you know, you engage two tribes out of many tribes, right? As we know, there are lots of Orang Asli communities across the country, each with their own customs and traditions, their own histories. Why specifically the Tumuan and Semai tribes? I guess why also specifically in Negeri Sembilan and Selangor and not elsewhere?
It was all very circumstantial because back in 2018, I met Rahman, and then I just followed him to a foraging excursion with him. And then we sort of like, I got busy with a few other things. And then in 2020, the pandemic happened. And then I just had to rely on the communities that are within the closest proximity to me. So that's a big factor in why I choose these people, basically. Because of the pandemic, I had to focus on these surrounding communities that are near to me or near to the people that I'm working with. Yeah.
And how many specific communities did you engage with?
I engaged with Raman, who is from Gombak, the Semai group, and two villages in Selangor. But they are neighboring villages, and they are the villages that surround the North Kuala Langat Forest Reserve. And then the other one is in Jelebu, because I actually went for a food study tour with Dr. Kate Cheng from University of Nottingham. So she actually organized a trip there, and I mentioned to her about my interest and the ongoing research that I'm doing now. And yeah, it just made sense to follow her with that trip. Yeah.
So let's actually talk about the plants themselves. So you've told us that the book is about edible and non-edible plants that are used by the Orang Asli. Can you, I guess, give us more details about that a bit more? What was the selection process like? How many plants are in the book? Could we delve into it a bit more?
Definitely each community has their own unique environment. And for this book, it's actually more of each individual's take on their indigenous knowledge of plants. So sometimes they do overlap. And it's interesting to see the similarity in how they treat or consume certain plants, because some individuals from different tribes, they may eat all parts of a plant, the flower, the fruit, and the young shoots. But some other individuals from other tribes may only eat the fruit of the same plant. So in general, they have very much a similar way of identifying these edible plants and cooking them. However, they may differ in terms of ingredients. And this is really also because of whether a community is still accessible to an intact forest or not.
Mm.
So this is where I want to highlight, because they normally would only cook using these foraged plants in their traditional cuisines only during their festive events, especially on Hari Muyang or weddings. They just reserve, the hassle of cooking these dishes for communal gatherings so that they can be shared with more people.
Could you give us an example of some of the plants?
Yeah, there's one particular plant that is very special. It's called Daun Semomo. In Temuan. They use it as a substitute of like onions and all that, because it really has a strong flavor, and you can't really find it growing in urban areas. You just have to find it in the deep forest. And well, there's one plant in the North Kuala Langat Forest Reserve. When I say non-edible, it's actually either it's medicinal, or it's used to build their houses, or things like that. So there are plants like this one called Akatawa. So the roots contain water that you can drink. Yeah, so it's not actually the plant. It's the water that it contains. So to them, it's very nutritious, and it can cure, fevers and stuff like that. Yeah.
And how did you go about selecting those stories? Because, I mean, I can imagine there's just so many plants, right? Where you went, I must imagine just in those areas alone, there's such a rich diversity of plants and people with their own experiences and their own stories. How did you go about filtering out these stories and compiling it into this relatively short book?
Yeah, well, at first I just documented everything that they shared and drew all of the plants. I think I had close to 50 illustrations to begin with. But some of the individuals, they were adamant on not sharing about some plants because some plants are just too risky to be written about because there is a thing called plant poaching. Where if, you know, like irresponsible parties just physically exploit these plants and they take out these plants which are naturally grown in the deep forest and they reproduce them for, you know, profits and whatnot. So they want to avoid that. And I have to respect that, of course.
Were they particularly sacred or precious? I mean, did they have a religious significance or a cultural significance that I guess is just too precious to share with everyone else?
Actually, it's more of how endangered the plant is.
Okay.
Yeah, and how hard it is to find certain plants nowadays, especially, you know, with all the deforestation and constant developments. So it has been increasingly hard to find these plants, especially the medicinal ones, because some of them still rely on these medicinal plants as they might not be, you know, accessible to modern medicine.
On that note, we do need to go for a quick break. We're speaking with Sharifa Nadira, the author and illustrator of Recalling Forgotten Tastes. We'll be continuing our conversation after this and finding out more about her experience with the Orang Asli on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Hezrel Ashraf. Today, I'm speaking with illustrator Sharifa Nadira on her book, Recalling Forgotten Tastes, and her experience illustrating and writing about the plants that are central to the Orang Asli's way of life. Welcome back, Nadira.
Hi.
Now, how long did you spend with the Orang Asli? How much time did you spend to sketch these plants? Because I assume you sketched these plants on site as well, right?
Well, it really started about 3 years ago when I properly visited them and asked them if I can, if you can share with me the knowledge and of these plants or the ingredients that you use in your food, which are forage plants. So typically, the foraging excursions would take about the whole day and about two or three trips back and forth to cross-check with them and to see if everything is correct. Because also I have to identify them with my botanist friends. So I had help from them to identify them because some are just cannot be identified at all. And I mean, it came to a point as well that I wanted to highlight the indigenous names of the plants. So that required more communication with me and my indigenous teachers. Yeah, to validate the information for this book. For example, the easiest example would be ubi kayu.
So something that's familiar to all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure all of us have had, you know, ubi kayu at some point in our life.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so. So ubi kayu is in Malay, but in Temuan, it's called tau ubi kayu. So they emphasize on the K. Yeah, so it's more of different phonetics for different plants, but quite similar to what we already know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does have a familiar ring to it.
Yeah.
How did these specific tribes shape the way you approached, you know, the plants and stories that you collected and included in your book?
With Rahman, he was actually from the Semai in Cameron Highlands. And he just settled down in Gombak. So that community in Gombak is a mixture of all tribes in Malaysia, and they have already adapted to various interracial marriages with Chinese, Indians, and the Malays.
Mm.
So, yeah. For the Semai, most of them still rely on the forest because they really still practice their cultural beliefs. They are, well, actually, every tribe still practices some way or another. But with the Semai, I think they still are accessible to an intact forest, which is really important for them. Whereas the Temuan, they are mostly, you know, succumbed to things like commercial agriculture and maybe 9-to-5 jobs. So, yeah, I mean, the shift is different now. And sometimes they may say that they are not able to practice, for example, eating traditionally or forage like they used to, but they still somehow still remember and they still try to practice with this knowledge, with this indigenous knowledge from time to time. And they really try to preserve this knowledge, and even though, you know, external factors do not permit them to do so. For example, in Kuala Langai, you know, the development threats, and yeah, so their forest is increasingly shrinking as we speak. So it's not their fault that they sometimes cannot practice this traditionally anymore. Or yeah, I mean, so it all dates back to the environment that they are in, the specific environment that they live in at the moment. For example, the one in Gombak, it's basically more familiar plants, but from the perspective of Rahman, he really like emphasized on plants that are very useful if you end up lost in the forest. So what plants might come in handy if you were to be lost in a forest. So that aspect shaped that section of the book. And for the Temuan in Kuala Langat, it really revolved around forests, like what ancient trees that still exist there, and the need to protect such primary forest, because it was never cut down, it was never reforested. So it's actually a very ancient forest, and that of course shaped that part of the book as well. And then the rest of the book mainly focuses on edible plants that they use to cook with.
Now, deforestation is affecting the livelihoods and the, well, the dignity, right? The way of life of our indigenous communities. We've seen how those things have been compromised by deforestation. You know, did this issue crop up in your conversations with the Orang Asli, and have these issues made their way in the book? Did you address some of these issues in your book as well?
Yes, definitely. Especially with this kind of documentation project, I hope to address their current struggles with, you know, this never-ending deforestation and developments that continue to disregard their rights as human beings, basically. You know, issues such as displacement in the name of progress, you know, all of this were brought up throughout our conversations. As far as we're all concerned, we're still far behind in recognizing basic land rights for the indigenous people in this country. Because when natural forests are replaced by malls and palm oil plantations, their ecological knowledge tends to slowly disappear as well, because they are not able to practice foraging like they used to. This whole like development and progress and whatnot, it all comes at a very high price, which is the loss of the natural environment, basically. But to them, nature is not only something that sustains their food sources, but it's essentially their only connection to their culture, their only connection to their ancestral lands, and ultimately their whole lives depend on it.
I mean, it's so significant, right? And I think that that really is very sad. Now, you came into this project as an outsider, and you're not from the Orang Asli, you're not from the Timuan or Samai tribes. And I guess there's always a conversation about where people should draw the line in terms of sharing the experiences of, you know, indigenous communities and speaking on their behalf. So what I want to ask is, what steps did you take to ensure that the stories you conveyed did justice to the perspectives of the Orang Asli, while also not coming off as someone who necessarily speaks for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very important question to reflect on for anyone who's doing similar works like this, and who comes in as an outsider. But for me, throughout the development of the book, I really had to be respectful in every step that I took, especially with regard to consent and educating myself also about their community and their struggles, but while also keeping true to everyone's intentions, basically. For example, the process was done in a manner where I continuously checked with my guides about their thoughts on the work, whether they are comfortable with it or not, whether I can or cannot share certain information in this publication, because some of them prefer not to be identified, or because in the book, I actually drew their portraits for each chapter.
And, interesting.
Yeah. So it creates like a bit more of a connected feeling with the readers. But some may not fancy that idea. So, yeah, I mean, I just have to respect that their decisions. And also, you know, things like some plants that are just too risky to be written about, and to avoid, you know, physical exploitation of these plants. And these conversations are really important to me, and for all of us to continuously reflect and on this kind of collaborations. Yeah.
You know, looking ahead, now that your book has been published, do you have plans to continue this conversation in the future through other initiatives or, you know, other projects that you're thinking of doing?
Definitely, yeah. As for now, plants and food are very much still my deep interest, and I hope to do even more research on that, and especially to collaborate more with the indigenous people from different tribes. There are also potential collaborations with fellow friends who work with the Orang Asli communities to document their food and their recipes. So since last year, actually, we did foraging and cooking sessions with the Orang Asli community in Kuala Langat. And we had like a diverse group of people joining the sessions, and we hope to collaborate with them to carry out more educational forest walks and cooking these forage plants with the women of the villages. But of course, once the MCO is lifted.
Right, of course. So we hope that gets under control soon. But so for those of us who are curious about your book and you know, want to get a copy and read it, you know, how can we go about getting a copy?
You can go to my website, which is www.sharifanadira.com. You'll find details there. Or you can also order the book from various bookstores like Tinta Budi, Ilham Gift Shop, and many others. Yep.
With that, Nadira, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Take care. That was Sharifa Nadira, the author and illustrator of the book Recalling Forgotten Tastes, where she illustrates and writes about plants and several members of the Orang Asli on their experiences with nature and with our forests, and you know how central it is to their communities and their way of life and their culture. If you've missed any of today's conversation or previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcasts on the BFM app, bfm.my, or subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Hezra Lashraf, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.